I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. Today on the show, Gregory Stockel has a report about a Swiss technology that has helped a man to walk again. Then, Gina Bennett presents this week's Ask a Teacher. She will get us up to speed on some of the many uses of the verb get. Gina will join me in the studio for a chat after her report. And we close the show with our series, American Stories. Harry Monroe reads The Return of a Private by Hamlin Garland. But first, here is Gregory Stockel.
Marc Gauthier has Parkinson's disease. The disease affects his nervous system, weakens his muscles, and causes his arms and legs to shake. The 63-year-old Gauthier had not been able to leave his home for some time. But that was until he became the first person to receive a new Swiss-designed medical device that greatly improved his ability to walk. Gauthier received a medical device called a neuroprosthetic at Switzerland's Lausanne University Hospital, or CHUV. Part of the device, called an electrode field, is placed against part of the nervous system, which runs in the back, called the spinal cord. Another part of the device, found under his skin below the stomach, uses electricity to stimulate the spinal cord to start up his leg muscles. It is called an electrical impulse generator. It changed my life because I'm now independent, said Gauthier, a native of the French city of Bordeaux, as he sat with his doctors at CHUV. I can leave my home, run errands, I even go on foot. The number of people affected by Parkinson's disease has doubled over the past 25 years, the World Health Organization found. Worldwide estimates showed that more than 8.5 million people suffered from the disease in 2019. Grégoire Courtine is one of the doctors leading the project. He said the electrical pulses delivered to Gauthier's spinal cord has permitted him to walk the way he would have without the disease. We strongly believe that many individuals could benefit from this therapy, said Courtine. He is a professor at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology Lausanne, or EPFL, the University of Lausanne, and CHUV. The study was published in Nature Medicine recently. The findings by Courtine's team at the Neuro Restore Research Center suggest the technology could be used more widely in patients with more progressed Parkinson's. Many of those with more progressed or advanced Parkinson's have severe problems with being able to move. Dave Marver is chief executive officer of Onward Medical, which designed the medical device. He said that the device was similar to another device called an implantable defibrillator, and those used to deal with pain. But he added the device is special in the way that it targets the spinal cord. For the healthcare system, it will look and feel familiar, but it will offer therapy that doesn't exist today, he said. Cortine's team plans to carry out continuing researching and test the device on 6 new patients next year. Jocelyn Block is the doctor who performed the operation on Gautier and co-director of NeuroRestore. She said with this therapy, if people can gain belief in themselves and can go out, socialize, and do more things, it is a big plus in their daily activities and quality of life. I'm Gregory Stockel.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question about the use of the word git. Hello, I would like to know more about the use of the word git. Over time, I have realized that it is an important word used in different ways, but I would like a clearer and broader explanation about its use. Could you explain more about this word, please? Thank you very much. Regards, Mireya. Thank you for writing, Mireya. This is a good question. Git is the most common verb in any situation, and it is around the 40th most used word in the English language. In speech, git is used almost once per minute on average. So, your interest in it is well placed. VOA Learning English has explored git several times. In an earlier Ask a Teacher program, we discussed the difference between take and git. And in an earlier Everyday Grammar program, we discussed that git can be used with the passive voice, although it is rare. We also discussed many meanings of git in another Everyday Grammar program. We shared that git has more than 50 uses, and it appears as part of at least 12 phrasal verbs or other expressions. In earlier programs, we discussed meanings of git, such as understand, know, obtain, receive, feel, become, buy, fetch, location, and its use to express impatience or frustration. As you can see, there is a lot to know about git. Here is some additional information about the use of git. Git is extremely common in spoken language, but it is rare in written language. Careful writers avoid git because it is usually informal. Git is often used with subjects that are not living things. This is important because most verbs in speech are used with animate or live subjects. Git is the second most common verb used with do to demonstrate special importance or difference. For example,
she finally did get better.
There is the structure get plus adjective presented in the Everyday Grammar program. Adjectives used with get describe physical and mental changes. The most common adjective used with get is worse. Other common adjectives include older and better. In addition, get is often used with adjectives to describe an increasing amount. The most often used phrases for this use are
get worse and worse
and
get bigger and bigger.
We should explain one final use of get. Some words are used in a fixed series in English. Get is used in many fixed series of words in spoken English. They are,
I'm going to get, you're going to get, I'll have to get, you can get a, I haven't got a, I haven't gotten any, you've got to, if you've got a, if you get, I can get on with it, get rid of it, got a bit of, I got one of them. Haven't got a clue.
Please let us know if this explanation has helped you, Mireya. Do you have a question about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Gina Bennett.
You just heard this week's Ask a Teacher. Now, Gina Bennett is here to talk with us about the report. Welcome back, Gina.
Hi, Katie. Very glad to chat with you again.
In this week's program, you answered a question about get. Maria said she realized get is an important word used in different ways, and she wanted a clearer and broader explanation about its use.
Maria is right. Get is an important word used in different ways. Learning English had already presented information about get in an earlier Ask a Teacher and two earlier Everyday Grammar programs, and we were able to add more information about get in this week's Ask a Teacher.
Wow, that's a lot of information. You mentioned phrasal verbs. Can you tell us more about them?
Sure. There are at least 18 phrasal verbs with get. Get is the second most common verb used to make phrasal verbs.
Like get out. We need to get the report out by Friday.
That's right. Get out is one of the most often used phrasal verbs in English. One thing that makes phrasal verbs so difficult is that they have many meanings. You used get out to mean publish or release, but most often it means to leave.
Let's get out of here and have some fun.
Yes. Two other most often used phrasal verbs with get are get back and get up.
Like the famous Beatles song that goes, get back to where you once belonged.
That's right. To return, she got back to London last Monday.
And you also said get up. It's hard for me to get up now that it's dark in the mornings.
Exactly. That is both a good meaning of the verb, and I agree with that statement.
Thank you for the chat, Gina.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure, Katie.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Our story today is called The Return of a Private. It was written by Hamlin Garland. Here is Harry Monroe with our story.
The soldiers cheered as the train crossed the border into the state of Wisconsin. It had been a long trip from the south back to their homes in the north. One of the men had a large red scar across his forehead. Another had an injured leg that made it painful for him to walk. The third had unnaturally large and bright eyes because he had been sick with malaria. The three soldiers spread their blankets on the train seats and tried to sleep. It was a cold evening, even though it was summertime. Private Smith, the soldier with the fever, shivered in the night air. His joy in coming home was mixed with fear and worry. He knew he was sick and weak. How could he take care of his family? Where would he find the strength to do the heavy work all farmers have to do? He had given 3 years of his life to his country, and now he had very little money and strength left for his family. Morning came slowly with a pale yellow light. The train was slowing down as it came into the town of La Crosse, where the three soldiers would get off the train. The station was empty because it was Sunday. "I'll get home in time for dinner," Smith thought. She usually has dinner about 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. And he smiled. Smith and the other two soldiers jumped off the train together. "Well, boys," Smith began, "here's where we say goodbye. We've marched together for many miles. Now I suppose we are done." The three men found it hard to look at each other. "We ought to go home with you," one of the soldiers said to Smith. "You'll never be able to walk all those miles with that heavy pack on your back." "Oh, I'm all right," Smith said, putting on his army cap. "Every step takes me closer to home." They all shook hands. "Goodbye. Good luck. Same to you. Goodbye." Smith turned and walked away quickly. After a few minutes, he turned again and waved his cap. His two friends did the same. Then they marched away with their long, steady soldier's step. Smith walked for a while, thinking of his friends. He remembered the many days they had been together during the war. He thought of his friend Billy Tripp, too. Poor Billy. A bullet came out of the sky one day and tore a great hole in Billy's chest. Smith knew he would have to tell the sad story to Billy's mother and young wife. But there was little to tell. The sound of a bullet cutting through the air, Billy crying out, then falling with his face in the dirt. The fighting he had done since then had not made him forget the horror of that moment when Billy died. Soon the fields and houses became familiar. Smith knew he was close to home. The sun was burning hot as he began climbing the last hill. Finally, he reached the top and looked down at his farm in the beautiful valley. He was almost home. Mrs. Smith was alone on the farm with her three children. Mary was 9 years old, Tommy was 6, and little Teddy had just turned 4. Mrs. Smith had been dreaming about her husband when the chickens awakened her that Sunday morning. She got out of bed, got dressed, and went out to feed the chickens. Then she saw the broken fence near the chicken house. She had tried to fix it again and again. Mrs. Smith sat down and cried. The farmer, who had promised to take care of the farm while her husband was away, had been lazy and dishonest. The first year, he shared the wheat with Mrs. Smith. But the next year, he took almost all of it for himself. She had sent him away. Now the fields were full of wheat, but there was no man on the farm to cut it down and sell it. 6 weeks before, her husband told her in a letter that he would be coming home soon. Other soldiers were returning home, but her husband had not come. Every day she watched the road leading down the hill. This Sunday morning she could no longer stand being alone. She jumped up, ran into the house, and quickly dressed the children. She carefully locked the door and started walking down the road to the farmhouse of her neighbor, Mrs. Gray. Mary Gray was a widow with a large family of strong sons and pretty daughters. She was poor, but she never said no to a hungry person who came to her farm and asked for food. She worked hard, laughed often, and was always in a cheerful mood. When she saw Mrs. Smith and the children coming down the road, Mrs. Gray went out to meet them. "Please come right in, Mrs. Smith. We were just getting ready to have dinner." Mrs. Smith went into the noisy house. Mrs. Gray's children were laughing and talking all at the same time. Soon she was laughing and singing with the rest of them. The long table in the kitchen was piled with food. There were potatoes, fresh corn, apple pies, hot bread, sweet pickles, bread and butter, and honey. They all ate until they could eat no more. Then the men and children left the table. The women stayed to drink their tea. "Mama," said one of Mrs. Gray's daughters, "please read our fortunes in the tea leaves. Tell us about our futures." Mrs. Gray picked up her daughter's cup and stirred it first to the left, then to the right. Then she looked into it with a serious expression. "I see a handsome man with a red beard in your future," she said. Her daughter screamed with laughter. Mrs. Smith trembled with excitement when it was her turn. "Somebody is coming home to you," Mrs. Gray said slowly. "He's carrying a rifle on his back, and he's almost there." Mrs. Smith felt as if she could hardly breathe. "And there he is," Mrs. Gray cried, pointing to the road. They all rushed to the door to look. A man in a blue coat, with a gun on his back, was walking down the road toward the Smith farm. His face was hidden by a large pack on his back. Laughing and crying, Mrs. Smith grabbed her hat and her children and ran out of the house. She hurried down the road after him, calling his name and pulling her children along with her. But the soldier was too far away for her voice to reach him. When she got back to their farm, she saw the man standing by the fence. He was looking at the little house and the field of yellow wheat. The sun was almost touching the hills in the west. The cowbells rang softly as the animals moved toward the barn. "How peaceful it all is," Private Smith thought. "How far away from the battles, the hospitals, the wounded, and the dead. My little farm in Wisconsin, how could I have left it for those years of killing and suffering?" Trembling and weak with emotion, Mrs. Smith hurried up to her husband. Her feet made no sound on the grass. But he turned suddenly to face her. For the rest of his life, he would never forget her face at that moment. "Emma," he cried. The children stood back, watching their mother kissing this strange man. He saw them, and kneeling down, he pulled from his pack three huge red apples. In a moment, all three children were in their father's arms. Together, the family entered the little, unpainted farmhouse. Later that evening, after supper, Smith and his wife went outside. The moon was bright above the eastern hills. Sweet, peaceful stars filled the sky as the night birds sang softly and tiny insects buzzed in the soft air. His farm needed work. His children needed clothing. He was no longer young and strong, but he began to plan for next year. With the same courage he had faced the war, Private Smith faced his difficult future.
You have just heard the story, The Return of a Private. It was written by Hamlin Garland and adapted by Donna DeSanctis. Your narrator was Harry Monroe.
That's all the time we have for today's show. But join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedell.